this so much. Oh, that person's stolen my bit in comedy. Mm. No one can ever say that about me because all my shows are just about like, my dad's Alice Campbell, got raped, had an abortion. Like, it's all like things that have happened to me.
That's the intro. That's the intro right there. That's the fucking intro.
But thanks, then Chris. I like that because then I'm like, you know, lots of people don't like my comedy, but they can never say that it's not original.
How do you want us to describe you?
Sorry.
Miss Trunchbull.
So distracting. Miss Trunchbull if she did porn.
We're in the storyline scene.
Yeah,
a
really famous, I'm not going to name drop, but like a really famous comedy producer, like American one once saw me do stand up and he was like, you come out and you're so posh and then you start talking about your vagina and it was a bit like Mary Poppins coming out and doing porn. Which I thought was a really good description.
To be fair, back in the day, do you think that's what men were thirsting over?
Mary Poppins.
Yeah, doing...
Yeah, maybe. I think Americans have a really... Americans have, like, not to be rude, but, like, quite a two-dimensional view of, like, English people.
So then, to
them, I'm really posh, which I am posh, but, like, there are layers of poshness. Like, my dad would hate if he knew anyone describes me as posh.
You are posh, but
I became more, my voice became more posh. I went to like a state school in Camden.
Went to Parliament Hill.
Yeah. And I did not sound like this. And then I started doing stand-up and I realised like, oh, my thing is going to be that I'm this annoying posh girl. So then I really lent into the voice. And my parents were like, this voice has just come out of fucking nowhere.
Permanent feature of yours.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually surmised the new labour years.
Yeah, you start working class and then
we've been socially mobile, so the accent has to go crazy.
Except for you.
No, but growing up, my dad, like, obviously this is not true, and I now know that this isn't true. My dad hated the idea that we were ever going to be in, like, the elite class, because he's always been, like, so...
How can you be working for the Prime Minister and just thinking you're not
going to be... Because he wasn't like most people in politics then. He didn't go to private school. He wasn't from a really rich family. He was from Yorkshire. He got into Cambridge. He was, like, an alcoholic nutter. And so his identity... And I'm not saying this is right. He used... You know the Monty Python sketch that's, like... Oh, we used to share a pair of boxers. There's this sketch in Monty Python where everyone's trying to like outwork and class each other. And that's a bit like what my dad tried to do, even though he was not working class. So I'm just saying that I was a victim of his brainwashing. And
really? Yeah.
It wasn't until I got to sixth form and I was like, oh, I'm like posh.
Chairman Campbell.
Yeah,
not everyone lives in Hampstead. The fuck? What the fuck?
God.
You lot don't live. Oh, shit. Not on the hill. What's left back in the stew? This is the intro now. We are here joined today by Grace Campbell, writer, comedian, legend, funny woman.
Thank you.
Hottie.
Yeah, Miss Trunchbull.
Miss Trunchbull.
If she was hot.
I'm keeping all that first bit in anyway.
Yeah,
that was
great.
Just funny.
That will get me cancelled for sure. Let's just do it.
This is becoming a theme now of like progressive people coming on the show being like, I hope I don't get cancelled for what I say here. No. But we're trying to push the limits, I think, about saying that we can... have a laugh.
No, 100%. I mean, this. I'm not that living in fear of that anyway.
No, but you're a comedian, so you guys totally. Get... You
See,
guys
I
get
was.
Cover.
I'm emancipated now because I can just say whatever I want, so it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you, like, free yourself of that fear...
Oh, my God.
You know...
You can almost do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, within reason.
Well, within reason.
Yeah.
Because you might get cancelled.
Yeah, exactly.
You said you'll get cancelled, so...
Let's not go too far, but... No, but I do think, like, once you... It's an interesting anxiety that people live with now, anyway. It's, like, fear of being cancelled because it's, like, the internet is so fucking weird. Can I swear?
Go crazy.
But once you accept, like, oh, I'm not a bad person, so, like, I'm not going to, you know... I'm going to just be myself. That's not going to get
But there's
canceled.
A fear of being right-wing, though, because I know I still fear being considered right-wing just for having maybe more centre views or something like that. And, like, I don't know, like, I get haunted by the prospect of being called right-wing. It's so bad.
Well, Che Guinness is a whole bit about the inner beast, the inner right-wing monster that's, like... coming out of you and you're like, fuck, like...
Yeah, resisting.
I'm just a little bit racist now, I guess. You know what I mean?
But, like, you know, whatever. That's the problem with the left. That's what's wrong with the left wing, is that we are so scared of upsetting each other, basically. Yeah. And so there's you know, we're still lacking in like a huge amount of nuance when we talk about like...
We just stop saying what we think, though. I think people, we self-censor, yeah, and then people are like, that's not realistic.
There's also like a dogma as to like what is left-wing anyway. So like it exists within this like puritanical framework, and then... If it's not that, then you're just accused of being a right-wing person, yeah, which I found anyway, so...
Totally.
Is that why you've had to be really left-wing to overcompensate?
So I definitely, growing up with my dad being who he was, felt like I didn't like being associated with, like, centrist politics. And, like, you know, again, when I was in sixth form, I went to school with loads of boys from Akron Burley, and they were all really left-wing, and they kind of, like, taught me a lot about like what my politics was then going to become. I, you know, I didn't really know much before sixth form, to be honest, which sounds really weird.
I don't think anyone
really
does about politics though.
Yeah, but I was being so associated with one like political lame world. Yeah. And so, but I definitely, in that same vein, do think that, like you're saying, we should be allowed to like say things that we think or have like critiqued and analysed ourselves without being scared that someone's going to be like, you're a conservative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then I guess, given you kind of grew up in that environment, did you think it was... Did you see the politics or did you see the day-to-day stuff? Because obviously they're so different but so interconnected. So how did you kind of navigate
those ideas? I just didn't know. So just like growing up, you know, I was born... on the 30th of April, 1994. And when I was a week old, John Smith, what was his name?
John Smith died.
John Smith died when I was a week old.
So then Tony went in.
So then Tony became leader when I was like in my first month, and then came on my first holiday and begged my dad to leave his job and come and work for him.
Wow.
And my mum had just had a baby, me, and then my mum's dad died, all in this really intense period.
Jesus.
And, you know, it was like an insane time to decide to take that job, but, you know, he did it for the future of the country. And then they won on my third birthday. So I was really young. Like, my brothers were a bit older and they had a sense of, like, life before it. I didn't. It was literally, like, from the moment I was born, this became our life. And then my mum worked for Cherie Blair. So both my parents worked in Downing Street. I just thought that was, like, their job. And that was it. Like, I didn't have any critical thinking behind it because it was just, like, all I'd ever known. And there was just these familiar characters in my life. It really wasn't until I got to sixth form and then became friends with, like... one of my friends, Felix, who will love that I'm mentioning this, but he was the first person who was really like, he's still a really good friend of mine, but he was the first person who like, we really had a conversation about the Iraq war and about like things that had happened under the new Labour government. I just like did not know that much. And so, yeah, and then I became radicalised against New Labour,
so those
basically.
Those dinner conversations when you found out what went down, what was your dad saying? Like, how did you negotiate that?
Well, so... I love my dad, but me and my mum, we are more in an alliance on most things. My mum's like...
Soft left rump.
Yeah, my mum's much more left wing and like she was very famously against the Iraq war. So it was like growing up, I remember that being a period of like massive discomfort in my house because they were arguing all the time. So I remember that era. I just didn't know like why they were arguing. I just remember thinking, are my parents splitting up? So then I guess when I became older, I've had many conversations with my dad about it. All of them are kind of the same. And then my conversations with my mum have been more productive, I guess, of like, you know, understanding what was going on at that time and like all of the sort of complications. And yeah, I don't know, it's personal and it's political. So it's like such an interesting...
Yeah, but imagine having to deal with that at school. Yeah, like being a physical person who represents like one of the most, like the biggest foreign policy fuck-ups.
Well,
British history. Like, it's just like a ridiculous amount of pressure to put on a child.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then maybe it's why I am the way I am.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Sometimes I think, would I be this kind of full of myself and thick-skinned if I hadn't gone through this, like, fucking weird situation? I look at some of my peers and they are more scared of things. And I'm like, God, like, when I started doing stand-up, a woman punched me in the face. She came up onto the stage and punched me in the face when she found out who I was.
Shut the fuck
up. And it was one of my first gigs. It was a gong show. Do you know what a gong show is? So they're these, like... Okay, so...
She punched you for being the daughter of Alistair Campbell.
But I'll tell the story.
That's so kind of psychopathic.
It was a gong show, which is you basically get 2 minutes grace period when you're on stage, and then three members of the audience have a card. After the 2 minutes, if they don't like your set, they can put up the card. Once all three cards have gone up, you're off. Okay? They're hardcore. And someone told me at the start of my career, do them because it's like really good practice. So I was on stage and I had a joke about who my dad was. And this woman, it was actually a work Christmas party. Talking of Christmas.
Mate, tell him right
she's going to be turned somewhere right now. This woman, she's smoking Pall Mall somewhere on the streets in central
London.
Ready
to punch you again.
And she got really irate, basically, and came up on the stage and like, basically, she strangled me. I'm not joking. And Anna, my best friend, was there. Like, at least she like got a member of staff, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on?" Then she tried to hit me. She didn't actually like properly punch me. And then instead of getting security, the three people with the cards just put their cards up. They were like, "We need this end. How do we make this end?"
I would have just been like, "Nah, just keep it running. Keep it running."
Yeah, and then I called my dad and I was like, "Oh, this thing's just happened." And then, now this is like, I used to do this as a bit, but I don't do it anymore. So you can have this line. But I told my dad, and then I got a call from an unknown number a few hours later, and it was Tony Blair. And he said, "I've heard this thing's happened, and I just want to say I'm really sorry because this shouldn't be happening to you. You've done nothing wrong. And like, just want you to know I'm sorry." And so I always say I'm the only person in the world who's ever got Tony Blair to apologise for the Iraq War.
You can claim that as a win, surely.
Yeah, for sure.
Man.
I just, my mind's going crazy places right now. Look, I mean, the thing is, well, we get it as well, because obviously not to the same extent. No one's punched me in the face, but people still say to us, "You support the Labour Party, Iraq War." And it's like, I can still support the Labour Party while thinking we got that fundamentally wrong. Totally. And also, I was a child.
People's inability to differentiate between the party and the politics and the government and all of the things that surround like political life is just such a problem, because you just get kind of tainted with the whole thing, which obviously
It turns you off the job. Why would you want to be a politician?
Well, this is the problem now. Well, I mean, unfortunately, no one is making, in this country anyway, no one is making it look like something that some of my most impressive, interesting, charismatic friends would ever want to do. Because of that, you're just reduced to the party that you work for. And you know, listen, I will not vote for the Labour Party anytime soon. They
really?
Will know.
Did you vote for them last time?
Pardon?
Did you vote for them in 2024?
No, I didn't. I voted Green then.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Keir Starmer was my MP. So I was like, I'm not voting for him.
Yeah.
And you know, me and my mum, we both of us, we're like,
your mum's not voting Green, voting Labour either.
No.
So go on, explain to us why you don't want to vote Labour.
Because of the way that Keir Starmer's dealt with what's been going on in Palestine, and like his whole, the thing is, and then also the trans, like the sort of, and Palestine Action, it's like all of this stuff. I'm like, I can't back you when you are performing as Tory light, I'm afraid. And that's unfortunate, because it's the party that I grew up in. And, you know, like, I wished one day for the Labour Party to be a party again that I feel I could back. But I feel like he's a really weak leader, and I actually think his moral compass is really wayward. So, yeah.
That is crazy. How does your dad feel about that?
I mean, probably is disappointed in it, but it's a bit like, you know, I don't support Burnley either. My dad's the most like tribal person in the world. I don't really support anyone. I'd say Arsenal. I would be an Arsenal fan.
God.
I'm from North London. Yeah.
We are.
Me
sorry.
And Jeremy Corbyn. I would say, but I couldn't tell you like anything about how they're doing or what's going on. I just know there's a match because I live near the ground.
Is Zach Polanski your guy then?
I've signed up to be a member of the Green Party, and there's a lot of about him that I really like.
That's it.
Just waiting in the wings, seeing what's going on.
No, I do.
You could come back if, let's say, if there was a progressive leader of the Labour Party.
But who would that be?
I don't know. There's a few people putting their names
forward
at the moment.
Yeah, there's a few talks of people.
Yeah,
I mean.
But like
Andy Burnham? Would you like Andy?
Maybe.
Wes Streeting?
Angela Rayner?
No.
Not Wes.
Really? Angela Rayner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Angela. I mean, I love Ed Miliband.
Yeah.
I think Ed Miliband has a real shot.
I don't know why. I hope he is going to, because I really like Ed, and I think he's a really.
Well, Javan went on LBC and said Ed Miliband. Yeah, he got asked about
it. First.
And was it Rachel Johnson? Boris Johnson's sister was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
And then what was the response?
Well, yeah, she just scorned me. She was like, "Nah,
really?
We can't be having that." Yeah.
No, I don't know about that.
But he's smart. He's like an intellectual.
He's smart, and he's also been really consistent. Ed Miliband. He cares about
poverty, inequality. Yeah.
The environment.
We had him on the podcast, and he's the only minister we've had on the podcast. Isn't he?
He's the only secretary.
And a few people have asked to come on. But the reason we had him was I was like, Ed is a real person. And like, I want to talk to a human being. Not talk to like the current crop of politician, which is basically like deflect and whatever. And like, look, your points that you raised, you know, Palestine, we've said our position over and over again and we think it's a massive issue for the party. And I think that there's no re-election chance that happens without being able to talk about it properly.
The position has also been morally bankrupt. I think that's the problem, is outside of the kind of partisan nature of it, like, the party's been complicit in genocide.
And arresting and putting in prison people who have held up a sign saying they don't agree with the genocide. I mean, it's like, it's a joke. Well, they look like a joke.
That's just like for us, we also criticise that from just being bad at fucking politics. Like,
bad PR.
What do you think it looks like to get an old grandmother arrested?
And
what does that say about
us? That's the part I don't really understand. It's like,
it's very thin-skinned.
Why hasn't someone... I started your episode with that guy, Jonathan Hall.
Come on. Listening to the low-key ones. I love that. Get in there.
I do research. I want to know what I'm coming into.
What do you think about what he said? Because I thought he was really interesting.
I only listened to the first half. It was this morning. But I thought he was interesting, and I thought, like, what the thing is, what I think about that, and I what I have to say, because I'm very cautious whenever I talk about politics, people, I get a hard time because of who I am. I have to say, I don't come from any of this with like a huge amount of knowledge. I come from it just with my instincts, and then like the information I have, I'll form opinions. But I never tell people what to think or what to do, because it's just like, I'm not, like, I don't feel that's ever my place. But I think that what they've done is, it's like, if I was within the government right now, I would have, that first weekend when there were those videos of that blind man being escorted into a police van, just said, guys, even though this is embarrassing, to do a massive U-turn, let's just cut the cord here. Such bad press.
It's awful.
It makes us look so
mean.
Bad.
Just so mean.
Awful.
And just poorly spirited. I think you're right. The judgment is so off at the moment. But I don't know. I feel ever confident.
Will you guys vote Labour?
I mean, I stood for Labour at the last election, so...
Okay.
against Farage.
Oh, I did know that. Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll always vote.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
I'm tribal. But at the same time, like, I'm not just going to go and give my vote away willy-nilly just because they're a Labour government or Labour party. I think they've got to earn for...
Yeah, and that's why... That's the thing that... This is where... I do disagree with my dad, and it's a bit like why I don't relate to football fans as well. Because if I was a football fan, I would find it hard to be loyal if a team was doing really bad. I would be like, right, cool, I'm going to move.
Well, clearly. Fucking hell.
Yeah, I don't have that undying loyalty to people I don't know. Like,
let's go champion, you back a winner.
Yeah, I've got a very competitive mindset, for sure.
I think I would still vote Labour, because... As someone who really believes in the power of like governing and the difficulty and the trade-offs that involves, like, the only reason I'm in politics is to change things. And like, we have a chance to change things. And the reason why we do the podcast is it's just not been radical enough.
Mm.
And I will keep on banging at that door and being inside that conversation for as long as I can. And if we lose, then I would say, why did we lose? Because we've been trying to tell you
that we can change
course, and we haven't yet.
But I think that kind of complacency point, just, I think there is a kind of subtle assumption that all of us are just going to keep supporting. I mean, I will, but I know that so many people like me just won't have that good
people
faith
like
and
you,
goodwill.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Like,
if we can't win you back, we're fucked. Well,
and
yeah,
it's a that's definitely shocking to some people, because it's like, especially my dad's so tribal to the Labour Party. Well, apart from when he got, you know, kicked out and whatever. But but I don't think the same way. I think, like, it's a bit like relationships. Like, you have to earn someone's love and respect. Mm. You can't take that for granted. Like, yeah. you can't behave the way that they have. And I feel that Keir Starmer has shown real weakness as a person, to be honest. And then just because there's no strong other option, I'm going to vote for you. That's yeah. not how I, think, I yeah. see
I think
it.
You rep- I think for us, we're quite like... not to sound really dickheadish, but like high information politics people, yeah. right? And so my issue with the Greens is about the economy and defence.
Yeah.
And those are like two, I think the two most important problems that we're trying to solve. I think Keir's problem is that because there is no like way through on those two points, which are basically the way in which to get people on side if you can't yeah. communicate properly, he looks like he's floundering and he looks like he's just appeasing America.
But
and that's exposed us.
The problem then becomes is because Zach Polanski has a coherent critique of what's going wrong. He's saying it's the millionaires and billionaires, and we're all seeing the rising level of inequality. So that's like a sufficient answer for so many of us on the left who want to see an alternative. And he's making a stronger case, I think, for the environment and social justice and racial justice.
As well.
And he's charismatic. So I think, like, I kind
of made
find
a couple
myself...
of mistakes, though, in the last week.
Yeah,
I mean Rory.
Yeah, well,
Rory gave him a little hiding.
I will say, I did listen to that episode and I thought, like, I thought two things. I thought Rory Stewart was, like, treated him so unfairly. Mm. And I said to my dad, like, I really think you need to say, like, that was unnecessary. It's not like there is an election next year. Sorry, next week or even next year. There's not an election for years. He's got time to figure some of this stuff out. Like, he's new and he's young and he's not, like, the most experienced politician. But I did think, in that same vein, some of his answers
You need
were...
to... Like, I'm sorry, like, if you're going to be a leader of a political party, you need to know how much debt interest to pay. It's, like, one of the big... It's, like, one of the biggest problems
But, if I was him, as in Zach, I would walk away from that situation and say, okay... I've got a lot to do, a lot to learn, but I can do it. That doesn't mean he's like done, which I don't think. I don't think that because so many politicians are successful because they've got really good teams around them, like finding, you know, there will be massive blind spots right now because it's all happened really fast for him. I felt that was he was unfairly treated in that way.
If he listened to the podcast, our podcast, he would know how much debt interest we're paying. So that's why I'm like,
Zach Polanski, listen to the podcast.
Zach Polanski, maybe we'll get you on in season two, my good man. But like, the point I think is that like you need to be details orientated right now, just in terms of like the how many poly crises there are and all the shit, you need to have an answer on all of these problems.
But that isn't to say that he won't now take that as an opportunity.
And I think that's,
to
it,
then
that's his
position.
Well, yeah, he's in a kind of developing
answers.
Position, and that's where my sympathy comes. But I do think if you're a leader of a political party, like you have to be slick all the time, and so that's fine to make a mistake. Probably once. Probably this is the first and last time he'll get that chance. But I think a lot of us who are interested in what they've got to say want something that is like deeply structural and has some like codified analysis just beyond the rhetoric than what we're
doing. Yeah, and also, you know, if you're coming with some of the things that he's saying, you do need to then back up what you're saying. And that's definitely true. But then I found like the whole... Yeah, I don't know, I found the whole... Because then I went back, because I've never really listened to my dad's podcast. That was one of the first episodes I'd ever listened to. And then I went back and listened to the one with Gary...
Stevenson.
Because then I was seeing all
and
this
Rory
stuff online.
And Rory fucked up again there as well.
And I was like really interested in that. And I just, you know, I said to my dad, I was like, you do need to have more conversations about like...
Do you think Rory's a bit classist? Because he did, because he had to apologise for Gary Stevenson.
But it came across really classist and
I think,
as well.
Honestly, if you have had the life that he has had... Yeah, like
I think he is,
and I said to my dad, not like he just stopped saying that. I said to my dad, you need to have a conversation with him about this because, like, you know, some people who love your podcast, again, like we're talking about Keir Starmer, don't take that audience for granted. You know, prove to them that you're evolving, that you're trying to be better, that you're listening and learning and whatever. I hate that, but like, do you know what I mean? And I said, like, he came across in both of those episodes as a snob.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so he needs to think about that.
And there's intellectual snobbery as well that he's engaged with, which I think was a bit distasteful.
But they're playing to that centrist dad who's going, fuck Zach Polanski and fuck Gary Stevenson, right? Because these guys are wokey liberals.
But those are people who... They've got their voter base. Like, they're going to be voting for probably the Tory party or the Labour party. There's a significant amount of people who are going to be voting for reform or the Green party. And he's got to be a lot less snootish and kind of arrogant in the way in which he
And I think the thing is, like, what I forget, and it's funny, I'm writing a stand-up bit routine about the rest of politics at the moment, but I forgot that, he's a Tory. Do you know what I mean? Like a real life when Tory. He's a real life conservative. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when I was listening to that, I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, and that was a good reminder of that. And then I had quite a lot of conversations with my friends about it who had also listened to it. And I mean, it's interesting because someone said to me the other day, if Rory Stewart ran for mayor of London now, do you think he would win? And I was like,
as a Tory,
as a Tory. But I was like, it's a really interesting proposition because he has won a lot of people over.
He's the most left wing Tory.
But I think he kind of caters to a kind of genteel middle class
London Tory. Richmond.
I mean, he'd put a
bad.
But even like, you know, I mean, I live in Brixton. Clapham's just encroaching by the day.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, all of those Claphamites are absolutely going to vote for Rory Stewart.
You don't even have to be in like zone five.
Fucking clips me. So. I mean, look, I don't dislike Rory. I thought, to be fair, on the debt interest stuff, I thought he made a fair point. I just think that there is a bit of a snootishness. And also the idea that, like, you say about Gary Stevenson, he's not qualified and the guy's got an MPhil in economics from Oxford. I mean, like, come on, like, just do your research.
But he's not like a Maynard Keynes or like Piketty or something.
Of course he's not. He's not Keynes, but I mean, he is he's influenced by Piketty and Gabriel Zuckerman. And that's the thing, is that, like, there is a cogent philosophy that we're interested in, economic philosophy around how do we attack this income inequality problem, wealth inequality problem that's being expounded by these, like, great French theorist thinkers. And Gary Stevenson, what he's done is just made that mass appeal.
He's just a communicator. Yeah, exactly.
Single issue, mass appeal. And if there's one thing that these political elites respond to, is a mob of people saying, we've had enough. And that's why I, like, think Gary's a force for good. And I said that to his face when I saw him.
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, he's obviously inspired by the same ideas. His real merit is that he's able to articulate them just honestly and passionately. I just don't think he's an economist.
I think, you know, that is it's an interesting conversation because it's like, and listen, this is where I don't know what makes an economist.
Well, yeah, never do I.
The first time in my life I was even having to consider how one becomes an economist. I was asking ChatGPT, how do you think I'm an economist?
I also think 80% of the people critiquing it were doing the same shit.
Was like so out of my depth having this conversation.
Cold sweat coming down my forehead.
We're not experts in anything.
I think the translation of that is like, also, who are you to tell someone? Like, that's where it does become like, you know, you have to consider like class and like economical backgrounds and what was Rory Stewart considering that moment when he was just shutting him down. And I think that's an interesting. And I also think would probably be, listen, the man went to Eton. Let's not forget this.
Yeah. Does your dad know about our podcast?
Maybe.
Well, he should do.
He might do. You should get him on the podcast, though. He'll come on.
We do need to do it.
I've been trying to plug.
You've met, you know.
I've been trying to get him on, but
he'll come on. He'll do it. Don't worry.
You can have.
He loves it.
Next time you're complaining about.
If you want him on, he'll definitely come on. He loves attention. My dad, like.
Does he? He loves running the family.
Camera, lights, microphone. He's there. He's glowing.
I interviewed your dad once, and I was like struggling to get the words out.
Why?
Because I fucking love him so much.
Well, I don't know.
I love him. He's the only Labour person I know who punches people in the face. I'm like, fuck yeah, go on, like, get in there. I fucking love that.
I rate him.
We're pussy yours, bro. I don't punch anyone up, bro. I get punched.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He still brawls. I love that. And he also is like, he's robust.
He's getting a bit old now, though.
Isn't it? Cold water swimming's keeping him young.
He can't really fight anymore.
Should we test?
He's not a fighter.
He's not doing a Misfits next year.
He once got asked to, for comic relief, have a boxing fight with Piers Morgan, and he was so game. And right at the last minute, Piers Morgan pulled out.
Really?
And my dad was so up for it. And then my dad then trolled Piers Morgan by getting a cardboard cutout of Piers Morgan and like fighting it on camera for comic relief.
Is it Piers Morgan keeps calling Gary Lineker Tubbs?
Oh, yeah.
Because he had a topless picture. Piers Morgan needs to behave, bro.
Stop.
I know.
How dare he?
I'm surprised he isn't on the Ozempic yet. Maybe he is. But he's just maintaining that.
The way I'm seeing people just dropping that as
Piers Morgan's really not in my algorithm, thankfully.
Really?
No, I do not see his face.
Yeah, no,
much.
Fair play. I see way too much of his mug. Let's talk about comedy and writing, because that's actually, you know, one of the things that we're super interested in. Why do you think the left has lost its sense of humour?
Or has it lost its sense of
humor? I don't know if it has. I mean, the thing is, that what is the left? Like, there are so many amazing comics who are left-wing. Like, look at Joe Lycett. He's a genius. Like, Joe Lycett's show at Wembley a few years ago was the best live show I've ever seen in my life. And he's very, like, left-wing, and sort of some people would accuse him of being, like, woke or whatever, but he does it in a very clever, subversive way. What was the question?
Have we lost our sense of humour?
I would then say that also, like, the right is very humourless as well. I think that in some ways comedy is, like, booming at the moment because of, I guess, obviously the internet. But I don't really know, like, if... There's definitely this, like, annoying stereotype of, like, and I'm going to say women, I'm going to talk about women, like, people think, like, women are, like, unfunny and, like, take everything far too seriously. And that annoys me a lot because, like, me and my friends, we're fucked. Do you know what I mean? Like, we sit around and we're just, like,
dark.
Horrific to each other. We are horrific. Like, we're
But most
so,
guys I know are.
We're so unkind and in a funny, really, like, humoured way. And I love that. And so I hate this, like, idea that, like, people think that we would not be, or we'd be like, oh, you can't say that. It's like,
yeah.
That's not
the vibe. Like, black humour doesn't seem to exist on the left, which I absolutely detest.
It does, but privately. But this is what I would say our problem
was that
because of cancel culture and because we were often the people with the pitchforks, we were like, yo, like, you actually can't say that in public. But then privately, we're being dark.
Everyone's saying the same
thing. They're dropping the same gags or whatever. Like, Jamila, you love her, kind of, you know, she got held up on this pedestal being like, she's the witch of woke or whatever, but like privately she's dark as fuck.
Totally.
And now publicly she is as well, I think, like, she's kind of realized that, like, it's better to just be completely
you
whole time. But I think we created a bit of a culture where we were kind of, oh, you can't say that because this offends this person slightly, and it's like, benefit of doubt, kind of funny. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but it's never snobbery because you're the arbiter of the rules and then you're kind of breaking them in private all the time.
Sure
Yeah, that's true. It's really interesting. My last tour show was about an abortion, and like, I knew it was going to get backlash because it's a very tricky topic, and I was making a comedy show about having an abortion. And I got like so much shit, obviously, from like the right, and like a lot of, you're a murderer or whatever, but that's so obvious. But then I got people on the left being like, this is so fucked up that you're mining humour from this. And I was like, who the fuck are you to tell me
how you should
feel, what I should feel about something that I've gone through? Don't come then. I made it perfectly clear like what the show was. There was one girl in particular who, there was one bit of the show that was really like, it was out there, and I'm not going to say what, but like it was dark but funny, and always got like a really good reaction in general because it was dark and it was like, you know, everyone's on the edge of their seat, and then I made a joke that was really inappropriate. Anyway, and there was one girl who was very upset about it, and she started like harassing me online and like commenting on all of my pictures and being like, you need to take that bit out of your show. And eventually I just replied to her and I was like, I'm really sorry that you got upset about it. It's obviously a very tricky subject, and like, having been through it, I'm sure you've been through it, I'm sure the bit triggers something in you, but I never hid the fact that this was a dark show about an abortion, so I'm not going to be policed by you. And then she was like, oh my god, thank you so much for replying, like, I'm such a big fan of your work. And I was like, what a fucking emotional whiplash have I just gone through?
Oh,
like,
my god,
then she was
so
like,
jarring.
Thank you so,
so
much, such a big fan, me and my friends love you. I was like, what the fuck.
Yeah, but I think sometimes I've had that as well. Like, we get hate comments to the Instagram where they're like, take this down. Like, it's just so unfair. Like, you shouldn't be putting this out on the left. And I'll respond being like, what do you think I've said? And they're like, oh my God, like, I really appreciate that you're taking
replying,
the time.
I know. They just want attention.
They just want attention.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, like, this is going to encourage plenty more hate comments.
No, but it is
like,
true. It is true. Like,
they just want attention.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so on that, obviously, firstly, gallows humour, right? Like, even in shit situations, people find the human, it's like the most human instinct, and it's like one that we have to protect at all costs. So that's why I love your comedy. But secondly, the abortion stuff, like talking to men about that.
Mm.
How do you find that men respond to? Because you wrote a great article in The Guardian about what it was like afterwards and the depression you experienced. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that you only hear when...
Well,
your friend, someone in your friendship group goes through
has
it.
Had it,
Well, I had a really interesting thing maybe was this in the article? I can't remember. Where, like, a while after my abortion, maybe like 6 months or something, I slept with a guy, and I was telling him about it after we had sex. That's just the kind of person that I am.
Yeah, very casual.
Yeah, just me, just a bit of a borscht chat on the bedside table. And then he was like, he started.
He might have been relieved.
Yeah.
he might have been like, thank God. Like,
no, he was like, fuck, we didn't use a condom. Anyway, no, we did. He was like, oh, this is bugging me out a bit because I got a girl pregnant a few months ago and I never checked in on her after she had an abortion. And I was like, I need you to do that now. Like, I need you to text her, because that was. The thing that bugged me was that, like, what is hard in these situations is, like, the person who, in your head, it's, like, kind of their fault because they, like, didn't want to use protection.
It's usually the guy's pushing
then,
that as well.
Yeah, yeah, then just has the luxury of being, like, cool, I'm out, not almost. Taking any responsibility, yeah. Not getting involved at all. And for some people, not everybody, but some people do find it hard what you have to go through physically and psychologically. Anyway, so I thought, oh, and then he realised, I should have done that. And then he apologized and sent her a text and was like, I'm really sorry. Like, and so I just think, as long as I've done that for like a few other women who have gone through that and made what they then have to go through eventually a bit easier, I feel really good about that. Just because your question was about men, like, I'm never going to change men's sort of like, a lot of men won't really ever care about this because it's like seen as a women's issue.
Aftercare though, like after sex, if you've slept with somebody casually, I think there are some principles to aftercare, aren't there? That a lot of guys either don't care about or learn to care about.
Well, this is it. I think it's also a case of, learning to care, because I think that emotional intelligence isn't always taught or expected on the part of men. And so it becomes a process that you learn sometimes by experience. And someone's heart, sadly, is oftentimes on the receiving end on both.
Yeah.
In both situations, and then you have to kind of find a way in which you articulate it. I mean,
totally. I mean, and there's loads of songs that I love listening to about, like, kind of my thing. And I used to have a joke about this, is like, my legacy is like how many men I've like made be nicer to their future girlfriends, if that makes sense. Like, I've gone through lots of shit with men, but I hope that in their future experiences they won't behave the way that they did with me, because I made it really clear how they'd made me feel. And hopefully if they're like someone who listens like we are and wants to like improve themselves, and that's a good thing, you know, you have to go through these things. I had to take responsibility for the fact that I also got pregnant. Like, it wasn't like I wasn't like the victim in this situation. The thing I just found difficult was the fact that I was left alone with a lot of this sort of grief that I felt, and the person who had gotten me pregnant did have the luxury to sort of dip in and out when it was convenient for him. But I wasn't alone. I mean, like, James and Jamila were amazing, and there was a lot of really dark jokes going on in LA during that time.
No doubt.
I was staying at their house for like 2 months after my abortion. There was a lot of inappropriate dead baby jokes. Yeah.
Fuck you, man. But you have to, though. Like, what else are you meant to do? Like, if you don't laugh, you cry.
Yeah. The day I had my abortion, I was making so many inappropriate jokes with the doctor. That's always been my coping mechanism.
Yeah, what does the doctor say when you're just dropping out these jokes?
He fucking hated me. He hated my guts.
I wouldn't know what I'd do.
Yeah, like, he hated my absolute guts.
Yeah, this is going to be stressed.
Did you see that clip this week? I love Conan O'Brien's podcast so much, but did you see the clip about, do you know who Conan O'Brien is?
Yeah, of course.
There was a clip, Will Arnett went on his podcast and they were talking about when Conan O'Brien's parents had died, and there was this really dark joke that Conan started of that it's Jason Bateman, he killed my dad, right? And his dad obviously died of old age. And then Bateman then gets involved in this joke in the aftermath of Conan's parents both dying. They're all texting each other about how Bateman killed Conan's parents. And then
2 days after your dad passes, of course, your mom passed away.
Yeah, which we didn't, I did which not
you,
see coming.
Which
yeah.
you did not see coming. So yeah. I text you, mm-hmm. Bateman is asking for your sister's street address.
Yeah. I saw this. Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's how me and Jamila sent it to me, and she was like, "This is us. Like, this is how we deal with anything that's like serious. We have to be so unbelievably inappropriate. Yeah, it's the only way." Yeah, yeah. And I thought that video doing really well showed me that actually we're all coming to terms with the fact that you should be allowed to make fucked up inappropriate jokes in those times if it's what you want to do. Your parents have just died.
Do you think there's something almost about the space though, like the space in which you can do it, obviously like the comfort of your own home around people, but like you still kind of want to be crude a bit when you're outside because it makes it more funnier, if
yeah
that makes
and
sense.
Also like my thing is I, like, there's just loads of stuff I just will never talk about in stand-up. I only really talk about myself because then no one can accuse me of plagiarism, which is great. Like, there's so much, that person's stolen my bit in comedy. Mm. No one can ever say that about me because all my shows are just about, like, my dad's Alice Campbell, got raped, had an abortion, like... It's all like things that have happened to me.
That's the intro. That's the intro right there. That's the fucking intro.
But
thanks,
then
Chris.
I like that because then I'm like, you know, lots of people don't like my comedy, but they can never say that it's not original because it's just I'm just.
But you know what you are? You're like the queen of owning her shit. You know what I mean? Like you just own your shit. And it's like, I think that that's such a like positive way to live. You just have to be transparent about yourself.
Do you think there's something to be said that you have to have had like shit experiences for, you know, like how like when I'm like playing my guitar and I've really had to have a horrible time before I can motivate myself, do you have to have a shit experience to make comedy or can it
no and some great comedians are really good at observational comedy. I've just never been that good at it because I'm so obsessed with myself, so like I'm just thinking about what has happened that's funny to me and how can I make humor out of it. But no, but I do think for me personally the best works of art I've ever seen have come from dark places, and that's on other people. The things I love are things that are people processing pain and trauma because it inspires me to do the same thing, and it's also like so cathartic consuming something like that because you're like, wow, that person went through that and then now they've made this brilliant thing. And yeah, so I'm a substance girl, you know.
So do you think with comedy as well, like the often thing you hear is that comedians are super depressed, you know, that meme of like staring out the window listening to music, like what do you think? Because you grew up in a household which was pretty mental, your dad's got issues with depression, he's been really transparent about it, this shit's genetic, you know, like, do you think that that's part of also what kind of gets you into comedy, is that this is just how people cope with pain?
Maybe. I mean, I think I, because what's interesting is I am actually like so much more fun than most comedians I've ever met. Like, not to be rude, I have loads of really fun comedian friends, but like a lot of them are fucking depressing to be around. Like,
really, like,
no,
literally,
truly,
like, just
no, I'm not. And none of the people I'm talking about are my good friends. Like, all the comedians that I'm friends with are fab, and we just sit and chat shit and we're fun. And if someone's sad, we'll talk about them being sad, but most of the time we try and be happy.
Yeah.
And like, that's always been kind of like, I've always wanted to, if I'm depressed, I have to cocoon and go away because I don't want anyone to ever see me like that. But I was always wanted to do something with who I was, and I always had things I wanted to say, and I always knew I didn't want to go into politics, and I saw stand-up as a way for me to talk about some of the things that you might talk about if you're a politician. But then you have this freedom of I can say what I want, no one can tell me. You know, as soon as you go into TV, then other people get to say, like, you can't say that. We don't want you to say that. We're paying you. Stand-up is so freeing. Like, you just write something and go on stage. And so I just really fell in love with that as a concept. That I was like, I can talk about politics. I can talk about whatever the fuck I want to talk about. And I can not be accountable, really, to a political party or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But your stand-up is, like, very sex positive. Like, you super open about your life on that front. But I remember reading an article by you in The Guardian where you met a guy who was like at a festival and he was like, oh my God, my girlfriend loves you.
And then like, he tried to get with me.
That's fucked.
Yeah, it was mad.
But like, surely.
It was mad. And we were at Glastonbury and all my friends were like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like,
where was his girlfriend?
I don't know. I actually don't think she exists. Well, I don't know. Maybe she did, but it was like, it was really odd.
That's an idiot move, man.
It was really odd. We were all like, get away.
But what do you think is going on there? Do you think that because you're so like upfront about, you know, being sexually liberated or whatever, he was like, well, she just she'll just get with
me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I got with someone recently. I can't say too much information because it's like, I feel I have to be, I always think there needs to be a year between like me talking about something that's happened, like just to protect that person. But they wanted to do something that was quite like out there sexually. And it was the first time we'd gotten with each other.
Oh my God, you have to say it.
No, I can't. I actually can't. It's going to be my next show. But I thought, this is interesting. I think the reason he thought I would be up for this is because I talk about sex.
Yeah.
Which is so two-dimensional in a way. It's like, just because I talk about sex doesn't mean I want to do like what you want me to do right here, right now.
No, you want me to be a porn star, basically.
Yeah, yeah. No, even like, yeah, but like it was... gross. And I was like, I'm okay. Like, I just want men to reply to my texts. That's all I'm looking for. Like, I'm not looking to be
high
like,
bar, bro.
Pissed
like,
on.
Piss is easier.
But so that's definitely, yeah, exactly.
Piss is easier.
Piss is easier, man.
Yeah, piss.
Text back on
we've
time.
We've all got to do it.
On time. That's fucked.
You got to go. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, I think that's, I do find
but
that.
Do you know what I think? I think it's like almost a continuation of like that teenage thing of, oh, she's like she shacks, you know, or like she puts out so
yeah, so that's what she must want almost.
You know, it's Madonna whore complex shit, like it just I mean the thing is
that's why I've dressed like a conservative church goer
like
today,
because
I thought
why you come through, like,
well, we're gonna talk about me being a big fat ho ho ho, and so I'm gonna come dressed as Theresa May.
Like, you know, the Horatio Gould's got a bit about Liz Truss being the hottest ever prime minister.
Oh no.
Is that the sexiest prime minister ever? But do you feel like, okay, here's an interesting thing. I was reading a lot of your, like, more of the kind of serious shit that you put out there, because I think it's quite a nice foil to the comedy as well. But what do you think, like, what do you think is driving this wedge right now between, like, young men and young women? Because that's, like, a big focus and interest of ours.
Well, I think that women have developed a different set of standards that definitely does feel newer. Like, if I compare my mum's and my mum's generation sort of standards of like how men should behave versus me and my friends, they are different. And my mum says that she's like, sometimes you and the girls, you want things that you might never get, like some of the things you're hoping
can
to
you
get.
Be a bit substantive about that?
In like just in terms of like not wanting to compromise on anything when we go into relationships, and that being a little bit unrealistic, but because we've been in like 5 to 10 years of sort of like red flags and icks, and like if he does this one thing, he's cancelled. You can't get with him. Like, and so it's definitely seeped into our psyche, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think that needs to change, and we need
to meet. It's a bit toxic, isn't it?
Yeah, we need to meet in the middle, and then a lot of men have gone the other way in the other direction. So it's like, I can't get with a girl who slept with more than like 3 to 5 men. Like, that sort of like slut shaming someone before you've even met them, having a standard of a woman that, sure, they exist, but it's degrading. Like, talking about women in that way, it does like degrade women to their sexual worth. And I've, you know, in my last show, I spoke a lot about Andrew Tate and the whole like body count thing, and this sort of like, sort of the way that men like reduce women to their value in terms of that being how many men they've slept with is interesting, because it's like, well, that in that it's the man that's low value, because it's like, how many other men have you gotten with? Men see women getting with other men as degrading to them, because ultimately they deep down think they are the ones without the value. It's like, they diminish our value, which I think is a really interesting thing to think about, because it's again like coming back to this like, still now, and I've obviously never really come into contact sexually with a man like this, because I know how to see if like an Andrew Tate support. I can tell, and they don't want to get with me either. They're like, she's a ho-ho-ho. Like, she's got. They're like, how many people have you had sex with? I was like, I've lost count at this point, so I couldn't tell you, but I'm definitely not your type.
And you can just sniff that.
Yeah, just
definitely. Also, they're definitely all really fucking bad in bed. That's the other thing. It's like, you're all they want to do is get with virgins, and so they're not going to know really how to like make a woman calm. I don't want to get with someone who doesn't know how to make a woman calm. Yeah, they're going to be so shit in bed.
How do you think girls feel about guys with really high body counts?
I
like absolutely like total schlaggy men.
Well, I think some girls definitely care. Definitely, in the same way that men care about it. And I don't, because I wouldn't have a leg to stand on. So I'm like, you know, as long as you're not going to cheat on me, whatever, I don't really care. But I have been with men who have really cared. And I did have a boyfriend who, it was actually a really big theme in our relationship, how many people I'd slept
with. Why do you think that was, though?
I was going to say, do you think it's something around a sense of confidence in yourself? Or do you think that's more of just like their own sexual habits? Or
I think probably it comes from maybe insecurity, like... and then I think it's social conditioning. It's like, well, I don't want my friends to know how many people my girlfriend slept with. It was a whole thing where he'd be like stressed when we were out. We'd like bump into a man, and like as soon as they'd walk away, he'd be like, "Have you slept with him?" And I'd be like,
"Every time."
Oh, well, really? A lot of the time, and I'd be like, "God, yeah. No!" Like, yeah. But also a lot of the time, yes. Like,
that. Like, what him?
The point where I was like, I don't want to lie, but like, yeah.
So it's completely well founded. So he was completely justified. That is so funny.
That's oh really got God. Me.
That's so funny.
But so
he's watching this right now. I'll be like, yeah.
He's vindicated. Yeah, he's vindicated. But what I want to say is, I don't. Have I got bogey in my nose? I also don't think that's a terrible thing. Like, that's a human reaction. And, like, we've all got our own insecurities. You know, like, there's definitely been things that I've been more affected by. Like, I was once seeing someone who had been engaged to someone else. In my head, I was like, that's a bigger... You've got someone that you've had a bigger experience with. Yeah. And that made me insecure. I couldn't really care less. So people have their own things. But I think ultimately now, the problem is we've gone, like, way too far... into the other directions. And also, all I can say is me and my single friends are pretty happy. Mm. And that's a problem.
And that's the... Oh, really?
Well,
that's
no, it's a problem for men.
Oh.
Because you don't need them.
Because I don't need anything, really, from a man. I like men and I love having sex, for sure, and I do that. But I've got a dog who makes me feel like I've got company all the time. And then I've got like loads of friends, and I've got a vibrator, and I pay my own bills, and like I feel pretty self-sufficient, and that can be a bit unattractive to a man. And
you're very successful as well.
I try and really understand that, because
some guys will find that hot though.
I don't know if you saw the
at the start.
Did you see the article about?
Really? Wait, I would need to get into that. At the start, at the start they find it hard. Yeah, that you're successful.
And then after a while, it's a bit like, what about me?
Oh, really? So interesting. Wow. I think. Do you think that's because there's a greater pressure amongst men to be seen as like the successful one, the moneymaker, the provider?
Maybe. I also think it's because I am annoying. And I'm loud, and I'm an attention seeker. So I think I have to take responsibility for that, because there are loads of successful women with boyfriends. You know what I mean? Like, so
this is not, just like a character.
I think
flaw.
It's that basically, like, I am a attention vampire, and I like the spotlight on me. And so sometimes after a while, that can get a bit like, then. What about me?
Just neglected, right? Yeah.
But yeah, I'm taking accountability. I'm working on it.
No, I love that. I love that.
Did you see the article about having a boyfriend being embarrassing?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean,
I thought it was so good, because it really touched into kind of what I'm saying right now, which is that like there is definitely a movement at the moment with like single successful women just being like, I'm not going to stress about it. Like it's and then there is a I can definitely sense people who have boyfriends being a little bit like, oh, God, it's kind of cringe.
Yeah, it is a bit cringe.
Like being engaged, embarrassing.
Do you think? Oh, no. I think it's cute.
I just think people should get a bit more imaginative with their engagement announcements.
Mm.
I just think that we've just reached peak share everything and everyone's bored
of
it.
Yeah, it's boring.
But I thought the article was quite performative.
Did you?
I thought she was signalling to a bunch of like, you know, and fair play if a lot of women are like checked out mentally at the moment because quality of men is whatever. But it's just a bit like you're talking, really what you're talking about is being an influencer and how you manage your audience. That was what the article was about. And I was like, how relatable is that? And firstly, if it isn't relatable, why are we venerating that? Like, why is that put on a pedestal? I'm pro connection first. Like, I think people should aim to be in relationships if they can't, like, then... If they want to, you know, if you want to have casual sex and sleep, do your thing. Like, I've got no stress with that. But I think it's good to feel like you're connected to people, that you have someone you can talk to.
Totally. And like, by the way, like, that's you know, I'm not going to say too much right now, but like I am, like I've definitely this year changed what it is I'm looking for in a really healthy way. And I've had much more healthy, like,
does that mean lowering?
No,
just
like
being
not,
more clear.
Just being basically being more attracted to men who can communicate, and then pushing away men who clearly aren't good communicators, aren't people who are going to be willing to emotionally like take responsibility for some of the things that they do and have some hard conversations and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then I've just had to reprogram my brain into being more attracted to men who do those things, because then it's like,
and
makes
was that
life
like a
so
conscious reprogramming?
Totally.
Really, yeah.
Totally. I was so always attracted to like
emotionally
malignant narcissists.
Yeah, but that is a thing that the Manosphere guys kind of latched onto, was that you can make a like pick playbook for essentially being emotionally abusive and manipulative.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's quite a lot of, because of the way our culture is, a lot of girls are like, oh, well, that's just like, he's unavailable, so that means he's attainable. You know?
Or it means I want him more.
Exactly,
you know?
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
like that whole thing. It's like Pavlovian conditioning, like with a dog, like you give a bit and then take away.
Yeah.
And, you give it, and
yeah.
it's like, that is a psychological wiring to get what you want, to manipulate
yes.
someone into something that you want. And that's basically what they package. Like when I was doing all the Andrew Tate investigation
100%.
Stuff,
even back in the day with those pickup artists.
That's
remember,
what they were
like,
doing. They were slapping people off to their face. And then
so
like,
long ago, as soon yeah. as the internet existed, I remember finding these videos of YouTube of like men being like, tell her she's fucking fat and ugly.
Yeah,
and she'll be in love with you.
Isn't that just awful though? That just like
works. Works, mate.
But so I think like...
It doesn't
work.
By the way,
it doesn't work. But people, men who want to do that, do prey on people,
on damaged people, and they find damaged people
weak spots, which I have a lot. You know, I've had a very weird life, and my dad is a very interesting character. It's definitely affected my relationships with men, and I've definitely been more vulnerable at times in my life to that kind of behavior and to being sucked in by it. And the thing I'm really happy about this year is I feel much more positive about my relationships with men at the end of this year.
Isn't that what she's basically saying in the article though? Because that's what I interpret it to be, like these men who are kind of low life's not really doing anything, what's the point in putting up with them when you can
yeah.
just kind of still have your standards and then hopefully the less embarrassing person comes along?
Yeah.
Is at least my reading
yeah.
of it, outside of it
yeah.
being
there's a really interesting theory about like from one of the researchers into incels, which is that like the popularization of online misogyny content is about men, those like met low value men or whatever, trying to lower the standards of women essentially by abusing them and saying like, you're a dickhead for having these high standards. And I think that might be true. I feel like that might be the reason that they're doing it.
But I do, and that's where I think we have got to figure out how this is going to like come back together, because, you know, like I can make jokes about like incels and whatever, but I don't want, on a more like close to my life way, I don't want people I know, men I know, to think that I think these things about them, because I don't. Like, I think I'm surrounded by incredible men, and I love talking about this stuff with men because it's so like useful to kind of, to sort of understand like some of the mindsets that like men have been in. But yeah, I just feel like the problem now is that women have become like a bit more impatient and a bit more like, some women now have these unrealistic standards, and then men see that as just initial rejection. And then what do you do? Well, you're butters anyway. I don't want to get with you. Like, as soon as you feel like someone's rejecting you, you feel like all these women are rejecting you. You're fucking ugly. You're a slag. I would never even touch you with a barge pole. That's what your reaction is.
Do you think also outside of the kind of reality of men, there's also an imagination where people have a fanciful idea, like outside of, okay, he's got a car, he's got a job, he's got a this, he's got a that, oh well, he's this type of person, he's this type of person, so they inject their own kind of viewpoint as to what
yeah.
they want you to be and
yeah.
impose you then and sentence
it's
you to their own
it's
yeah yeah but like
yeah.
you
yeah.
almost become sentenced to like this imaginative version of yourself that you don't even know exists but exists
yeah.
in someone else's head.
But a lot of people,
you know,
fall
mean?
In
yeah.
love with an idea of a person,
well yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean, and then reality.
But that's why we should all
down.
Be doing therapy because
oh,
like
yeah.
that's the problem, is that when you like can't, and I did that in my early 20s. I would project so much onto a man who I barely knew, and I had just decided that they were going to like change my life and that they were someone. And then suddenly you fall out of love with them and you see them, you bump into them one day and you look at them and you're like, I cannot believe the way I used to, you were an animation compared to what you look like now.
Yeah. And you see what you want to see.
Totally.
At the end of the day.
Totally. And you fill a void in you with this ideal person, basically.
But do you not think we are quite mean to young men? Like, we problematize them a lot. We can be quite dismissive. I don't think we offer them the same empathy that we do to young women.
I mean, yes and no. I would say, like, the aftermath of the adolescence conversation, I felt like was very... One of the criticisms of adolescence was that it was so not about the girl who died, right? Which, like, I got why they did that, but it totally centered the boy.
Yeah.
And actually, the whole conversation afterwards centered these young men and what's happening. And so I would go back on that and say sometimes I think young women are being, like, ignored in these conversations. It's all about the growth of toxic masculinity in secondary schools, not about the effect that's having on young girls' self-esteem in these same schools.
Yeah. When I go to schools and talk to kids about, like, Tate and masculinity, manosphere stuff. I did it with a charity called Groundswell. The young girls, really interesting. Their attitudes towards this shit, which is basically, fuck these guys. Their attitude is like robust. It's like, if a man,
but
if a guy attacks me,
that's what
I'll
they're saying out loud.
No, I'm not. I can
performatively.
I'm saying, exactly. And it's coming from a place of concern, self-protection, defense, etc. But obviously these are like teenage kids. And I, you know, my message to them is that, like, we both need to come across here and work together. You know, if that person has said that thing, explaining to them how that made you feel and why that is wrong is the most powerful and effective thing you can do, because it gives them a chance to revise their belief and say, hey, look, actually, I'm really sorry about that and I'm not going to do that again. Whereas if you do
and
say,
not be defined by these things and be able to
which
say,
I think
oh,
happens
actually,
a bit,
yeah.
You know, because if you're super combative, and that's just not to like we're human beings and we're having emotive reactions, that's always going to happen. But I think if the response is to make a pariah out of that person each and every time, especially as a teenager, I'm like, yo, like that is it's a hard place to come back from.
And then expecting those people then to correct their own behavior without any kind of corrective
guidance,
and or
obviously
anything
the natural instinct, especially when you're young, is to just be so defensive because like, how dare you accuse me of these things? And I was like that as a teenager. Like, if anyone told me,
we're having
like
an identity crisis anyway.
Exactly.
Right? So it's like...
So, but I think the problem is like they're not being given like enough space like to grow and evolve. And it's a bit like what we were saying earlier. I don't know what we were talking about. Oh, Zach Polanski. It's like you're allowed to be a work in progress as long as you don't do a heinous crime. You're allowed to say, oh shit, yeah, I got that a bit wrong. And we don't teach kids that, like, apologizing, moving on. You know, like, even when you're young, you think, fuck, this is the worst thing in the world. No one's going to want to talk to me again. Like, my entire social status has, like, exploded because of this one thing that's happened. Not, yeah, it's cool, this shit happens. Like, you know,
but it
that's
is worse
what we need
now
to get better.
Because there's, like, a digital footprint of
I know.
Which is there.
But that's why
forever.
This thing in Australia is amazing. I can't wait to see how it goes.
Me too. I think it's going to go really well.
I really want it to go really well
and for them to, like, everyone to just fucking calm down. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think the thing about, like, kids use, like, 10-year-old girls go, like, using retinol. Like, what the fuck is that about?
Crazy.
Yeah, but did you see this influencer's, like, made a skincare brand for toddlers?
Children.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Fuck off. Literally, fuck off. Stop doing this. Why do we keep doing this to kids, though?
Yeah, I know.
Did you feel as a kid, I cannot wait to be an adult? Like, I used to think that all the time.
I need to be an adult.
And I just think, like, I felt like that before social media. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I felt like I appreciated my childhood, to be honest. I was very blessed. I had a nice childhood. But, like,
nice.
I just think now...
Fucking lucky prick.
I don't know.
Relatable, no.
I don't know. I would happily be a child, to be honest. Just go and chill out at home.
Do you want to have kids?
I think at some point. I mean, I'm really lucky. I've got... the person who I love, and I really hope that she just stays with me for the rest of my life. But, like,
I'm sure she will.
Shout out Jatala.
Yeah,
you've got it together.
Yeah, you know, she's cool. Yeah. And it's weird because this is the first time in my life I'm starting to think about this kind of shit.
How old are you?
I'm 29. Well, I'm going to be 29 next week.
Okay.
So, like, I'm not just like a stupid age to have a kid now. I can actually probably father a person and have to look after them. Yeah, I don't know. I think I do, but the most important thing is like the stability.
Yeah.
The fact that the world is just so unstable and there's so much consequence to your actions now if you don't get it right, that it makes it a bit more daunting, the prospect of having a family. And I think for a lot of young men, these are kind of more fundamental questions now, outside of all the kind of ideological stuff that we're kind of thrown with. It's actually like the stability of being a man, whatever that is.
And thinking about how you'd be as a father as well. It's so interesting. Like,
also, you take it for granted that you will. Like my partner recently got diagnosed with endometriosis and adenomyosis. So like she's having to negotiate basically the idea that you might not be able to have kids, you know, and to watch that for her and realize how much social conditioning girls go through to basically be told this is your function in society and then have all of that ripped out in front of you alongside the most painful periods.
And still going to work and still having to pay your bills and all the kind of mundane things of life.
We're literally going through a fertility crisis right now. And I am absolutely convinced that this is linked to microplastics.
100%. My mom said this thing the other day, right?
100%.
I've got really bad adult acne. I've got makeup on right now, but it has not been great. And it's been like making me very insecure. I'm on camera a lot, blah, blah, blah. My mum, we went for dinner with loads of my friends, like my girlfriends, and everyone around the table said that they had acne. And my mum was like, I do not remember in my 30s,
food, man.
All of my friends sitting around the table having it. She was like, something has definitely changed in what we're consuming. Because why have we all got skin problems in our 30s?
Do you eat healthily?
I eat really healthily. Wow. I've just started eating meat. I was vegetarian my whole life. I would say like, I do drink. So if I was sober, maybe it would be better.
Please don't tell me drinking causes acne.
Well, it's sugar. No, for women, because it's hormonal.
Oh, okay.
Not for, it's and sugar, you're drinking, it's like, PCOS, what, like,
wine.
Yeah, red wine is high sugar. Yeah.
I get bacne.
Oh, yeah.
I get bare bump knee.
Yeah.
I get bump knee as
There's another word for that.
Batty knee.
What is it?
Batini. Fine, I got it bad.
Yeah, I actually got a really. Get benzoperoxide. Get benzoperoxide. That really will help.
Benzo anything. Yeah. Yeah. I take some Xanax with that as well.
But yeah, I agree. And, you know, so many of my friends are having fertility problems. And it's. And maybe, you know, I don't know. I've not. Like, I don't know.
Do you want to have kids?
I want the option of it, and that's why I found having an abortion really hard, because what if I never get pregnant again? I've got PCOS, so like, I don't know, you know, it was like, who knows?
So it's polycystic ovaries.
That's why my skin is so bad. But maybe, like, if I met someone who I felt would be able to be a really good co-parent with me, even if we weren't always together, yes, I could never ever do it. I'm like the laziest, most disorganized person. I'm so type B, like I couldn't do it on my own.
But type A about work?
I mean, just about. Really? Because I've got about 8 agents. I am bad. I'm really bad. I've got like 800 unread WhatsApp.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better.
Because you did Airbnb once, so that makes you feel...
Yeah, no, don't take it personally. I think I should make my like bio on WhatsApp, like, if I ignore you, message me again, because I just like don't see it.
Well, so people are busy, man.
Mine always says 10 minutes later, so that means they know.
They know, it's coming. It's coming. It's in the post.
Yeah.
Daily Mail put out an article this morning. The 11 man-repelling beauty trends women must stop wasting their money on.
Love.
So I thought we could do it like that. You know them TikTok things where it's like 1 to 10 and it comes on the screen and you've just got to rate it, right? So I think most of these things are hot. So we're just going to go from there. So you're going to rate from 1 to 10, Grace Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Will you rate whether these are hot or not? Okay.
Yes.
Overly decorated or overly long nails?
Oh, love.
Where are you putting that on 1 to 10?
I'm hiding my broken one.
Let's have a look. Get on camera.
I was going to go to the doctor. I was going to go to the nail shop.
Is this your traumatised doctor?
I call it A&E, the nail shop. I go, I'm like, an emergency. You need to deal with this right now. It's been an emergency. Operate. But I was going to go and get one pink nail before I came here, but I didn't have time.
Oh, a rogue nail.
I love having nails. Like, do you know what? These are a form of self-defence for me.
Is that why?
I could stab, if someone came to me, I could stab them in the eye. Look how sharp that corner is.
Do you, the one thing, the one problem I have with nails is that it's just like another economic stress for young women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, being a woman is so expensive. And I don't look, I look like someone who doesn't really do that much. I do so much. Like, I do so much just to look like she looks quite natural. Like, I'm doing so much, body admin. It's unbelievable.
I didn't have any appreciation for this until like I got older, though.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
you, you wouldn't know until you're in a relationship.
But also, yeah, nails take an hour and a half.
And that's it. It's not just the money, it's the time. It's the time. Like, the amount of time that my girlfriend is spending doing this stuff, I'm like,
it's an hour and a half.
I mean, she looks beautiful.
The other day, my friend was like, I've got such a busy day tomorrow. Like, I can't. I was asking her to do something with me. She's like, I can't. I'm really busy. And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm getting my lashes done, then I'm getting my eyebrows done, and then I'm getting my nails done, and then I'm going to therapy. And I was like, it was a working day in the working week. It's like, people don't work anymore. Yeah.
Oh my God. She's a freelancer. If you want to know where your deliverable asset is, you're hold tight. Okay, so where are we putting that on 1 to 10 on the list?
I mean, I'm going to give that 10. Is 10 good?
No, 10's the lowest. That's the least hot.
Oh, then I love nails, so I'll give it a 1.
You're going 1.
Really?
Okay,
wow.
Okay, this is funny. I love the way they've called it this as
but
well.
But wait, can I ask, do you think that long nails are a man repellent?
A man repellent?
That's what this article is.
No, I mean, I think the super crazy talons. I'm like, yo, that's...
I just think, I don't know, they look impractical.
Exactly.
That's the only thing that I
the
think
the really long
like,
ones are quite
the really long that's... ones where it's like clanking on, on everything.
But you should see me that's like in COVID wild. When I didn't get to do my nails. I can't do anything.
Do you not grow them out?
I don't know how to use my hands
like...
without them. Huh?
Do you grow them out or what?
These are my natural nails. Yeah.
Oh, really? That long? Yeah. Man.
Right, blow wave hair. That's the most Daily Mail.
What, like a blowout? Fuck off.
They put Stacey Solomon as the photo. They've got a photo of Stacey Solomon.
I love a blowout.
Stacey Solomon
I
looking absolutely
hate the Daily
unreal.
Mail. I'm sorry.
She looks unreal.
She is unreal. I love Stacey Solomon so much. I'd love to meet her.
She's unreal, man.
Fuck off. I love whatever women want to do with their hair, they should do with their hair.
So blow wave hair, where are you putting that on?
I just think this is so upset. Like, I hate the Daily Mail.
You're going to hate all
How
of this.
How dare they?
I think it gets worse.
Well, I'm going to give everything a 1, I think, because I've got women's backs.
Ally? She's an ally. Okay, over-attacked eyebrows.
Like, do what you want.
How long would those take?
Fake. Should we just go through it all? Because we won't have to rate it all. But it's a lot. Okay.
But the thing is, I'm not going to rate any of this badly.
No, because you're a girl's girl.
I am. I just think people, if you want to do something, you want to do whatever to your eyebrows,
what about
do
this,
it.
What about this one? Turkey teeth.
Yeah.
Crazy. Didn't Miley Cyrus change her teeth the other day and it actually looks better?
Does it look better?
It does
really?
Look better. Yeah, she's got like her normal teeth now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they look great. I'll be honest.
I feel like it was a bit of a psyop. I feel like someone, it got like contagion. And then Love Island.
Yeah.
Love Island.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Love Island
maximized
is secretly owned by the Turkish government.
Yeah.
Maybe Erdogan just put a little bit of money
into the tourist
economy. Do you know
what I don't like about this? It's like, why are they all the same length?
I know, there's no variation.
Why don't you shave, like, natural teeth?
You've got normal teeth.
Up. Yeah, I do, but I am getting them sorted.
Turkey teeth.
No, I'm getting Invisalign.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get composite bonding.
That's the only thing that I worry about.
So
is when you get older, because don't your teeth get exposed? Like...
So I had braces when I was 11 and obviously I stopped wearing my retainer.
Same, that's
now,
why I'm getting Invisalign.
And now I've got like an underwire.
Same, look,
I've got
same.
What the fuck?
Look, that one goes
They don't tell me about that. This tooth is popping
so
out.
I mean, and now I'm having to spend £4,000 to get Invisalign.
I'm going
to
get
my
teeth
wet.
That doesn't really work.
It doesn't work?
I've tried.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my days.
That's
I have contemplated turkey teeth though.
But
if
why?
I get
You've
to,
got
like,
such nice teeth.
Yeah, but I think like they probably won't be this nice for another like 60 years. So I can just
yeah, but you can
with,
do
like,
that later on.
Yeah,
when
later
when
in
you get
life.
Your peas up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
But
yeah,
you've
yeah.
got really nice teeth.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No worries.
No worries.
No worries. Give me a compliment back.
Heal the gender divide. Yeah. This is it. We fixed it, guys.
Do you know that's one thing I think is we don't. I think. I like paying men compliments because I
Thank
actually
you.
Think like men don't pay each other enough compliments.
Don't you think we get a bit like weird when it happens though? Like,
yeah,
if you compliment a guy, they're like, yo, like,
well, Freddie said I looked sweet this morning, like a
yeah
sweet
but that's
wife.
Really nice.
So,
that's right. Really
you
nice.
So cute, bro. Honestly,
that's really nice.
So this is his cutest fit all, yeah. all season. I love complimenting my, I love telling my boys I love them.
Yeah.
I don't like, yeah, but my boys Freddie's know that I love them deeply. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that sort of friendship, when you get there and you guys are so comfortable and you can just, you can literally be honest. Like we, when I meet up with my mate and we go for like a walk around Regent's Park, like the first like half an hour is just like trauma dumping.
Yeah.
And then after that, we then take the piss. And it's like, it's the most cathartic thing ever.
But that's really nice. And you know what? Honestly, like this year has like made me feel like so much more positive about men in general. Like not just like in my perspective, but like I've seen just some really amazing like male friendships this year. And I've really seen like men looking after each other more than maybe I've just not noticed it before. But I love that so much.
I feel as though it's like very much there. It's just not allowed to be kind of sung
celebrated.
And shouted.
Yeah.
Because I mean, my best friend, he'll cry to me down the phone. And it's just like
it's
that.
Normal.
I don't know. It's just how it is. And I just think like, I'm sure there must be most men up and down the country who are probably like that, but they just turn into a bit of an asshole the moment they have to like announce it.
They're
say,
just the ones who are doing shit stuff are really like fucking the whole thing
yeah,
up. Because
totally.
Everyone's concentrating on it and some of the shit is like really fucked up. So it's like, yo, like, and so we have to talk about
it. So I have a story that I wanted to tell, but it's a bit dark.
Are you trigger warning us? What's going
no,
on?
No, yeah, I am. So don't get cancelled by Rachel on Instagram. but like, it's a good example of like, it's something, because when I read your questions that you're going to ask me, I thought about this story and I've been trying to figure out how to tell this as a stand-up bit, but I think it's too, I don't think it's going to work.
So we're not allowed to laugh?
Yeah.
No, you definitely can laugh, okay. But like, I just can't figure out the angle quite yet.
Should we try and, well, let's workshop it.
Okay, so I wrote an article for The Guardian like 4 years ago about being raped in Vegas in America. Before I'd written that, I was writing an Edinburgh show, like a stand-up show. And the show was about my obsession with male validation. And I got inspired to write the show because after I was raped, it was really interesting. The first person I wanted to talk to was my ex-boyfriend. And I thought that was interesting. And I was like, why do I not want to talk to other women who might understand, or like my male friends or whatever? I wanted comfort from my ex. So I started thinking about my obsession with male validation. I started writing this show, which was not about what happened in Vegas. It was about like my conditioning to like want male validation since I was really young. Anyway, so I pitched this article to The Guardian and I get on a call with the editor of The Guardian and I was talking through what happened. He was a man, the editor. And I was talking through what had happened to me in America. And then in the conversation, I said, oh, and I'm writing this show at the moment about my relationship with male validation. And then he said, the editor, have you ever considered that maybe the reason you were raped is because you're so obsessed with male validation on this Zoom? And I like froze and I was like, the fuck? Like, this is a Guardian, like, left wing, what the fuck is going on? So I like didn't say anything. I just like ended the call, burst into tears, was so fucking traumatized by it. And then Jamila was like, you should put that in the article. And I was like, well, obviously I'm not going to put that in the article. They're not going to publish it if I like out this guy.
So you attributed it
and
to
she was like, say it was someone else, right, in the article. So I was like, this is tricky because if he clocks I'm talking about him, he's going to pull it. And I was going through hell writing this article. But I was like, it's the in the piece, it was all about like why I didn't go to the police because of, you know, I've spoken about sex so much and like think basically me doubling down on the fact that like women like me don't go to the police because why would we? Our whole lives would just be like used against us. Everything I've ever said would be used against me in court. And so I used that quote as an example of like what some men's like personal bias is when they hear a woman's been raped. Anyway, so I send it to the editor and I was really nervous because I was like, he's going to clock that I'm writing about him. And in the Google Doc, he just replied to that bit and went, wow, this bit is so powerful. And I'd said it was a friend, a male friend of mine in a pub.
I read it.
Because that's what prompted me, because it was in one of your questions.
So I sent the quote to you being like, who the fuck is your friend?
I know.
Being like, what a fucking cunt.
And all my best friend Zach was like, bruv, you know, people are coming up to me being like, was that you?
Free Zach. Free Zach.
He was like, this is very annoying. People think it was me in the pub that asked you that question.
Oh my days. That is insane.
Isn't it mad that he had no recollection of saying it?
So poetic. Good. And he was like, it is, because you read it as a gut punch.
Yes,
you read
I know.
It as a gut punch.
But it was him.
Fucking.
So that what that made me think about so much is like, wow, like some people don't ever stop to think, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think, well, half the time, these people aren't even thinking about what they're saying.
No, exactly. No. They're not even
Which
recalling.
Which is what's just been proven.
I know.
But it's a classic thing of an editor Mad. Trying to get a reaction out of someone when they're writing something to push. Because whenever you're making an article, they'll edit something and be like, they'll fluff it up a bit. And you're like, I didn't say that though.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, but it reads better.
I now have a clause whenever I do any press that my dad's name is not allowed to be in the headline, otherwise I won't do it. But that's taken me a really long time, because I, even with The Guardian, that article, the initial subline was Alistair Campbell's daughter recalls being raped in Vegas. And I was like, what the fuck does this have to do with Alistair Campbell? Like, I'm talking about a very universal thing that women go through. Why are you like name dropping my dad?
And also a very like individual experience as well that has... I guess
and my dad's there like, what I got to do with this?
Someone would also read that and go, Alistair Campbell raped in Vegas. What the fuck? Alistair Campbell got what? He must be getting old. Do you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's really
that
interesting.
But like, that is so revealing though, isn't it?
I think
men's, a lot of men's posturing when they hear stories like that basically is like, how... Like, am I to be blamed?
Yes.
Like, am I responsible in some sort of way? Because I'm a man. And it's like, just listen, mate. Just listen.
Mm.
Like, you don't need to have an opinion. Like, it's just an experience. Just listen. And like, that's the most important thing. And like, obviously, the a lot of it as well, you know, with men, don't throw stones if you live in glass houses, right? I think a lot of guys don't want to hear it because they think, oh, well, I did do this when I was a teenager.
That's why I thought that song on Dave's new album, Fairchild, was so amazing, because, do you know what I'm talking
about? Do you want to explain what the song is for listeners who haven't heard?
So it's a lot, it's a basically a story essentially about a girl being raped like one night, but then Dave kind of does like the backing vocals of it, and then he comes on and talks about like how he has been complicit in a culture while also not being I honestly listened to it like 100 times on repeat. I was like, this is such a genius piece of writing, because we should all, and I'm not just talking about like men, like we should all be able to say we've been complicit in things while also being like, I'm trying to not be complicit in that anymore. I'm going to work out a way to no longer be that way. And I just thought like that was so vulnerable of him.
No, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
I mean, I also think it's responsive to Kendrick Lamar's song Father Time. That whole album being about how his mum was sexually assaulted as well. And these are conversations now, I think, where men are realizing that a lot of the damaged behavior that they're experiencing, or maybe that they've been complicit or maybe even active in, is responsive to some other past of damaged behaviour that's already happened.
Well, I mean, for some men, they've had those experiences themselves, and not to defend or apologise or for anyone, but they're dealing with their own kind of fucked up shit, some of these people, and they just may respond to the world in a completely unacceptable and awful way, but there has to be some sensitivity in trying to understand why certain people
100%
pursue.
Yeah,
because we have this thing about badness sometimes that it just happens out of nowhere.
No,
that
exactly.
People just do
without
out of nowhere with no context. And it's like, not to say we need to humanize every fucking fucked up person,
but understand where these things come from, and also like why. For me personally, like in my life, the only way I ever can get over things is if I understand why they've happened. I need to understand like why that person did that or why I did that. And then I'll be able to process it and say, okay, now I know that's never going to happen again. But otherwise, if you have that approach of like, oh, it just, those things just happen. Well, then no, because then how do you get over, how do you like,
how do you process it? How do you process
it?
You can't.
And I think there are a lot of people walking around the UK, London, without a sense of closure about anything. And it's just kind of haunting them in every aspect of their lives.
Especially older generations who just, like, did not grow up in, like, where they can talk about anything.
This shit. Yeah.
Anything.
But that's that's why their coping strategy is a lot like, just fucking get on with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, also, like, there's something to in, you know, you do have to get on with your life. Like, even when bad shit happens, you have to...
Well, it doesn't stop.
Your life doesn't stop. You've got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you just have to keep going, because if you stay there with you languish.
You're soaking in your own kind of misery.
I always say, like, with my friends, I'm the same. I give myself a period of grace of, like, I'm going to wallow in this. It's going to be all I'm going to talk about wherever I go. I'm going to be fucking annoying. And then time's up. And Jamila actually, at some point when I was in the aftermath of my whole, like, abortion depressive episode, at some point she was like, right, we've got to stop talking about this now. You're just paying it too much attention.
Yeah, it becomes so indulgent to a point, and it just becomes quite nice to wallow in yourself, and it does you no good. I know.
Yeah, exactly. You can do it for a little bit. It's like a course of antibiotics, and then
that's
like,
it. Just get on
and
with
then you
life.
Have to get on with it. And because otherwise you pay these things way too much attention, you give it way too much power.
Also, I think what's amazing about your work and what you do is that you just refuse to be a victim. Like, I don't think anyone reads it going, she's a victim of, you know, you are fully in control of your own narrative. And I feel like that's a way that people need to get to with their lives. Like, it's your story, you know, you're telling it, you're talking about it. You know, you need to have agency if you're going to feel a sense of self-esteem and worth. And a lot of us, I think, at the moment, I think this is probably about social media as well. A lot of us people don't feel in control of our self-esteem. You know, it's being male validation. It's being refracted in your social media likes. It's being, you know, and I get it as well. Like, we fucking run a podcast. Well, like, of course, this all
your whole validation commingles. Is determined to a point by someone else. And I think that's the problem. There's been such an over-focus as to what my own sense of myself is, and everyone else has been able to kind of fill that space
to write that for you.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's alienating.
It's horrible. I mean, honestly, like, I find the internet really
stressful.
Yeah, scary. It is.
But all the influencers I know who are like, let's say, like, they did like a reality TV show. Those people are depressed.
Yeah.
Those people are depressed. Like, they had a taste of it, and now they're scrambling for relevancy, and it's like, I don't know. I don't think this is going to make you happy.
Yeah. And do you know what? The best thing that... Oh, my God. She's so cute. She's waking up.
It's actually amazing how quiet she's been for the lot. We've been screaming.
Yeah, I know.
We've been screaming for an hour and a half. Eddie's just chilling.
Snoring. Yeah.
Welcome, Eddie.
She's such
very
a cute girl. I gave her a bath today just for you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Is like... one of my main things I've tried to work on this year is getting to a point where I actually don't care about, like, the numbers and the algorithm. And, like, so for instance, like, sometimes my Instagram will be shadow banned, and before it would make me, like, very depressed. I'd be like, how am I going to make money? Like, how am I? And now I'm just like, no, just delete Instagram for 2 days, get over it. Don't pay it too much. It's not real. It's not real. It's obviously real in some ways, and it's amazing. But letting it define your self-worth, which I've done for so much of my career, is so unhealthy.
No, it's killer.
You're out of control of it.
It's killer. I guess that's our one lesson to maybe younger listeners or whatever. It's just like, there's a real world out there. Just go
but
enjoy it.
But it's like what you just said. It's like the things that, like, reclaiming your sort of narrative, the things you can control them how you want to. Relinquish control. It's like the whole AA thing. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Relinquish control to the things that you can't control.
Do you know what? I want to do a whole episode on AA, because it's actually like, there's a lot of good shit in there, like, especially for men. Like,
and Al-Anon is a lot of really good.
What's
like,
Al-Anon?
Al-Anon is for family members or friends of addicts. So it's like an AA, but for like the people who have someone very close to them who are addicts. And it's amazing because like you get to sort of talk to other people who are struggling to cope with an addict in their life. And there's a lot in that.
I think as well, there's a lot of addiction in our society right now to all sorts of shit. Like, not just alcohol, but like, you know, there's Narcotics Anonymous. There's probably going to be a Porn Anonymous soon.
Yeah, but even, you know, things like the casual things, like sugar, you were saying.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that we're so casually addicted. Yeah,
obesity.
Lack of movement. Faking. Like, all of these kind of
really trying to get off it.
Bro, don't. I got the big chungus.
I haven't vaped since yesterday morning, and I'm
congratulations,
like,
oh yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Should we go for one?
But it's because I'm worried about the plastics and the acne. Like, I'm like, is there a connection there?
My skin has got worse since I started vaping.
Really?
No, genuine. No,
really? You stopped smoking?
I was off vapes for like a year and a bit, and I started again 6 months ago, and my skin's got worse. Do you also get a thing in your nose where you feel like a little bit coldy? I get
what,
like,
from vaping?
I think it's from vaping. I feel like I'm got.
Well, it's not good for you. I hate to break it to you, like, it's not good. I just wish there was a quick way to get rid of it. Like, I wish.
I don't know. I'm kind of glad I dodged that bullet. I never really.
I'm getting shamed so hard.
No, and
I just thought it looked weird, like having like a plastic thing. No, but imagine it's so trying to tell someone in like 2010 you're going to put this fucking plastic
sock on a battery.
Yeah,
you're gonna suck on a battery.
Yeah, and you're just gonna walk around the streets,
right,
and
it's so nice to sell
strawberries.
It's so embarrassing. Well, it's an adult pacifier, it's an adult dummy. It's like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, 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 exactly.
Healing their inner children, basically, yeah, like comforting your inner child. That's how I
also, because I have an addictive personality, I knew that that shit was not good for me, and that couldn't go anywhere.
But you know what's so impressive in that is that so what's really interesting, I've been listening to the Alan Carr Easy Way to Stop Vaping audiobook, and one of the things that he says is like smoking and vaping are actually really counterintuitive, because when you first try them, they're not nice. Yeah. You don't like them.
You have to push through.
You push through, you persevere. And it's weird because it's like some people don't and then some people do. And I'm interested in what distinguishes those two types, because it's not good for you and it's not nice, but yet I still do it.
Yeah, do.
And it makes me anxious.
Yeah, and to really? Quit. Yeah, yeah, but nicotine makes you anxious.
Yeah, nicotine makes you so much more anxious. Like, and I've got really bad anxiety, but yet I still do it.
I think, and also to stop, you have to persevere. Like, it's not easy. It's not easy.
And willpower is hard, like having willpower.
Exactly. I ain't got much of it. Right, look, guys, that 90 minutes just flew by.
Guys, that was so fun.
Grace, thank you so much for coming on. Genuinely, we'd love to have you back again next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Come back.